हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. Text 8. I have noted clear signs you have gained strong faith in these topics, a faith that will soon bestow upon you all its rewards. The disposition of another's heart is difficult to read, but an elevated person with clear intelligence can discern from one's gestures where one's faith lies. Right? So clear intelligence means connected to Krishna. Because if you see things connected to Krishna, then you can see things, how they're functioning actually. You know, whether you're dealing with devotional thing, whether you're dealing with the modes of nature, what modes, this kind of thing. Does that make sense? One can discern from one's gestures where one's faith lies. But from the satisfied expressions on the Brahmana's face, Surup knew, this disciple has developed confidence in the truth of my story. Right? Because he's heard all these different things, but he's not in anxiety, he's not something to gain or lose or anything like that. Because otherwise, sometimes we see is something comes along in the story, and there'll be words in it that we're worried about, and so then we get, you know, well, what about this, what about that? So there's not, but here he has that satisfied, that confidence, right? He can see that he's comfortable with it, right? That's what he wants. So then that's the point. In other words, Sarup's mission had achieved success. Once strong faith in the transcendental reality is established, one's spiritual practice very quickly bears fruit. So that's the point. The strong faith is the main thing. All these other things are just there to be engaged or to help develop that strong faith. Right? But all the secondary aspects are just there to assist. They're not actually the main thing. Strong faith is just that this Krishna consciousness is actually what one wants. This is what one wants to do. One has faith in that process. Right? Oops. It's interesting, you know how when you sneeze it's supposed to cover your mouth and nose like that? But it's actually in Ayurveda, it says if you cover your nose and mouth you won't sneeze. You know, if you sneeze and you do that, then you won't keep sneezing. Yeah, so it comes from the Ayurveda actually. You know, you take cloth and just cover it? It'll somehow adjust the air and so it doesn't, you know, sneeze. Unless, of course, the cloth has a bunch of dust in it, and then that's another thing. Nine. Early this morning, Sri Radhika Devi herself came and ordered me, Sarup, a Brahmana from Mathura, who is my devotee, is coming to my grove. The Mathura Brahman considered himself a devotee of Durga, but she is a partial expansion of Sri Radhika, Lord Madan Gopal's eternal consort. Right? Because for her, this is all her. She's a Sarup Shakti. So all aspects of Shakti are her. It's just a matter of which aspect, how you're dealing. So then if he has that nice devotion, she's just thinking, why shouldn't that be in its original form? Why should it be something less? 10. Go there alone. The first thing today, enlighten him with good instructions, console him, and make him quickly attain Krishna's grace. Had Sarup not awakened the Brahmana's higher intelligence, the Brahmana would not have obtained Krishna's favor. Right? He would have just been going on worshipping Durga. So that's nice in that you're following some rules, you're accepting authority, but the unfortunate thing is that one will just stay in the material world. One won't actually get out of the material world, because one's worshiping Durga means that you want to better your situation here, rather than one's worshiping Durga to get Krishna's grace. Right? Because then, if you're worshiping Durga to get Krishna's grace, then you're dealing with Yoga Maya.
Mm-hmm.
Right? 11. On her instruction, I swiftly came here, overjoyed, without even a thought about missing the enjoyment of Krishna's company. To carry out his assignment, Sarup left home early in the morning. Before Krishna went out to the forest with his friends, Sarup did not mind missing Krishna's company for one day, because he knew that carrying out Sri Radhika's order would endear him to Krishna, and this would surely increase the happiness he enjoyed with Krishna. So here's just a subtle point is that for those who are living in the spiritual world, then coming out means they're already here. It's just a matter of which side they're, whether they're functioning in the apricot side or they come so you can see them in the prakat side.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that, you know, so then when come down means it means they just come down to this view where one is looking with the material vision. But actually, they don't have to change place.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
They're already here.
Yes.
So that's an interesting point.
Right?
And so when I say Nityali Pravishna, means they just go back into the apricot. You know, it's not that they have to go there. They're always in the pastime, but then they just go back into that. Yes?
So they're beyond the time and space.
Yes.
It doesn't take any time.
It's just they're in the same place. We're here, they're performing their pastimes. If they decide to talk to us, then they just walk into our dimension. They're already in the same place. So that's what he said. He got up early, instead of going out with Krishna, he went to this grove, you know, the grove where the Brahma was, and just walked over and started talking. Because for them, it's all one place. So the Boma Leela, the Golok Leela, you know, it's all the same thing. So the Boma Leela would have the Prakat and Apricot. So because they're in the Apricot, then Prakat's not a problem for them. So it's not that, you know, they have to get there, pack their bag, and then, you know, walk off. You know. That's an interesting point. And since you're here, then they can also catch a plane and go to New York. Right? You know. Right, so he would be missing Krishna's company, which you saw as he didn't want to do at all, but because following the order of Srimati Radharani, then that would make Krishna more happy. So pleasing Krishna is his whole point of being with Krishna, right? He's with Krishna to serve. So now by serving Radharani, then that will please Krishna. So he's already accomplished that goal. So for one day he does that, then it's not a problem. So, yeah. Like that. And that's here's another point of the, you know, from the Puranjana. We're not used to, you know, taking some instruction or direction from the ladies, then you're not going to like this kind of program either. Like that. One will say, yeah, but, you know, yeah, but how?
Hmm. Now the question is whether was it the aggressive mercy or not? Because he didn't want it, actually. You know, he wasn't.
Yeah, that's aggressive. It means see, aggressive here just means you take the leading role. Right? Aggressive doesn't mean it's rough and all that. That's the modern connotation. Right? You know. Forget what it was. It's just I saw it once. I don't know if anybody else has seen it. It was I think one of the king, maybe King George or somebody. Somebody, upon seeing some monument that had been built or something that was arranged, and when he saw it, you know, because I guess whoever was the artisans put it together, and then he came to view it, and he said three words like that. And then, but when you hear those words, you think you really hated it. But actually, then the person who put it up then showed what was the actual original forms of those words. You know, and so it was actually, he was very much appreciating it. You know? Like that. You know, like awesome means it inspires awe. You know, so this was things like terrible and some other things like that that was actually meaning it, it inspires these particular qualities. You know, so that's the difficulty. Is that for us, aggressive then is always seen as bad. Aggressive simply means you're taking the leading role. That's aggressive. I mean, it can have a negative connotation, right? But it just means that it's you're taking the leading position. So the Brahmin didn't ask; he just goes up to him and starts, you know, talking. Yeah, but in doing that, see, the problem where aggression is bad is that in going up and talking, you're not talking according to the nature of the person you're talking to. So that's the thing: is when you're forward, you know. In other words, in this case, it would be like saying you're forward. So if you're forward, but it's about dealing with the person according to their nature, that's the aggressive they're talking about. Right? So that's why we see Paranjana is forward about dealing with the girl, but he's dealing according to the nature of the girl. Right? And so she immediately thinks, okay, here's a suitable husband. So that's the meaning of aggressive here, what's meant. Yeah. Yes.
Now, if we can say that Srila Prabhupada was in the same
yes. mood. Yeah, otherwise, you know, we're perfectly happy rotting in the material world, and he comes up to us and kind of, you know, shakes us out of the tree, you know. Like that. And I think in the Star Ranch, that was literal. Yes, like that. Yeah. No? Yeah, okay. Yeah. 12. Sri Prakrit said, when Sarup saw that the Brahmana, even after spoken to in this way, had not awakened to the treasure of pure love, Sarup put his hand on the Brahmana's head. By the mercy of the great soul Sarup, everything Sarup had experienced became manifest at once in the Brahmana's heart, as if the Brahmana had experienced it himself. But he had the right attitude, but the love hadn't developed, right? So there are no doubts, there was no other apprehensions, not something else to do. So he was in a properly situated state, but love for Krishna hadn't awoken. So then by giving his mercy, then it awakens. Right? Yes. So we can see is that this is what Radharani wants. So if we're wondering why hasn't love awoken, because we are not quite yet to the point that he was having. We're not satisfied, you know, from all the things, and we've developed confidence in that. So as we develop that satisfaction and confidence, then these things will be awoken. Because yes. Right? Because Krishna wants it. It's not that he just sits there and just, you know, he just sits there and goes, well, eeny, meeny, miny, mo, you know, whether he's going to give the mercy. You know, it's not like that. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
But it means that if we're here, we want it. Krishna also wants it. Radharani also wants it. Then why doesn't it work with us? The guru puts the hand in our head and then
boom. It says here, has developed confidence in the truth of my story.
We're also confident this is a true story.
I guess maybe, okay, we're confident it's a true story, but maybe it's not fully confident. We're not as confident as he was.
Do we know?
Well, have them put your hand on their head and then see. If after that you develop love for Krishna, then you know you're on the same platform.
No, I mean, why wouldn't we follow the same process?
We are following the same process. Meaning?
With the hand and the guru and his mercy, and then it will be developed.
Yes. It means the same process is there, it's just when the right time is there, then that will come.
So it's not just like curiosity puts a hand in our head and then it manifests immediately.
Yeah, but the point is you have to be up to the point of being able to do something with that.
So it's not like
Ramakrishna Vivekananda. No, not exactly. Slight difference. Like that. Because we see Sarup is still, you know, part of the pastimes. He doesn't lose that. You know, it's not the.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about the...
Prabhupada calls that the Shaktipat method, where after the guru gives away all his energy, he starts crying and lamenting that he has nothing left.
Yes. Yes. So not like that. Yes.
We hear from Chaitanya Charitamrita that Mahaprabhu, when he was walking around the country, sometimes he gave his mercy just like that. He you know, people just looked at him and they became Krishna Prema. Or he actually hugged them. He used a lot of his body. And those people were like, you know, like regular people off the street.
Yeah, but there were regular people off the street that had appeared at the time to be a merchant. So the point is that anybody could develop love for God. But at the same time, as one has to, that has to be one's interest. Right. So that must mean at that point they were just fully absorbed, and so that was enough. You know, so we'll get fully absorbed and then think about something else. You know, so it won't be as stable. So when it becomes more and more stable, then that will happen. So if that focus is there, then we can do it. Right. That's the point of the sadhana. When the sadhana is really fixed, the more it's fixed, then the greater the benefit. That's why it says very, very soon. A faith that will grain strong faith in these topics, a faith that will soon bestow upon you all its rewards. Okay. So that it's that faith that gives. So prema is simply mature faith. Mm-hmm. That's why cultivation of things that break down faith, create duality, you know, all these things, they're basically useless for the devotional process. People may think that they're very important because they think secondary is important. But actually, no, it's that faith in pure devotional service. That's the real thing. Right? And then secondary, since secondary doesn't matter, we use the secondary that's recommended by the acharyas. What do they do? What do they work? How do they do things? Because since it's about Krishna, that and the secondary is to please Krishna, then we should use those things that they used. It doesn't matter about our conditioning and all that. Means within what they used, we choose those things that we can more relate to. But this whole idea is, no, from my conditioning, then I choose the things. But then your conditioning that you have, the choices that you made, that's why you're here. We're here in the material world because of our choices that produced our conditioning. So to start from that and say, no, it's my right, my position to function from that, yes, you can stay here. Right? Radharani will interact with you as Durga. So we have to understand what the acharyas are saying when they're talking about engaging the nature of Krishna's service. It's about Krishna's service, and then we're engaging that. It's not about the nature itself. It's not about the conditioning. So if it's not about the secondary, it's not about the conditioning. It's about engaging Krishna's service. So the reason we know our conditioning is we know what we have to work with. Just like you want to cook for Krishna, then it's always good to know what you have in the kitchen. You know, what pot pans, what facilities, what ingredients you have, things like that. Then I can make a plan, and then, okay, I can cook this. But if you don't know, how do you cook? If you go into a kitchen, you don't know what pans are there, you don't know what ingredients are there, how do you cook? So that's why we know Varnashram, we know these things, because then we know what we have, and so then how we can engage in Krishna service. And so since it doesn't matter about the secondary, then whatever it is, we engage it. Is that my sense? Yeah. Otherwise, we want to be careful of that. We don't do like the, what do you call it? Like they did, like happened in India, is they kicked out the whole thing of Swaraj was to keep their own culture, but so they kicked out the British but kept the British mentality. So then very quickly then they destroyed their own culture, like the British had tried for 250 years to do. They did it in 50, right? Much more efficient. So you have to be careful of that. So it says, we can say, okay, but then if that's the case, then we're Malechas by, you know, our Westerners by background, so that's what we have to engage in Krishna service. Yes, that's what we have to engage, not the Malecha mentality. Otherwise, Malecha's bad. Yavana's worse. Malecha just means meat eater. Simple guy, meat eater, like that. Yavana means they oppose the Vedic version. So that's the main difficulty with the Western. Non-Vedic is this opposition to the Vedic.
Yeah.
That's what will get in the way. So that's useless. You know. So then we're saying, okay, engage all the atheism, all the this, that. No, it's just you may use the facilities, but if you use the mentality by which those facilities are present, why we were born into this culture, then that's going to get in the way. We have to use the devotional mentality. Then one can engage things. But the point is what's there is so varied, you can engage it in so many ways. You can go to the shop in the West, you know, whatever you want to go to. Go to a Safeway, go to a Tesco. Okay, now walking into that shop, what, by buying ingredients there, what cuisine of the world can you cook? Any cuisine. You understand? So if it was, it's nowhere in the West, we can only cook Western stuff, why isn't there only Western stuff in the store? Why is it you can cook all this other stuff? You know? What's an American vegetable? Right? You hear of a vegetable? I can say one, cactus. Pumpkin. Pumpkin and cactus. That's the only thing I know. You go up in the Northeast, they cook pumpkin, and down to the South, Southwest, they cook cactus. Because that's all that grows there. You know, you take a cactus and you cut it up and you make it into a sabji. Like that. You know, some throw in some nettles, you know, where else? Everything else came from somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? So all these things, that's the whole point, is that this whole concept that I'm rooted in a particular thing. That means out of everything in that store, you buy, you know, 5, 10, 20 items. And then say, oh, this is all you can buy. This is all you can do. That's a very narrow mindset. So you have to be very, very careful. Right? So when you're applying this principle of Yukta Vairagya, you apply it right because it's a razor's edge. You get a good result. You don't apply it right, you either end up as a Mayavadi or a Sahaja. So Prabhupada shows how to follow it nicely. And he gives examples. So since we want that, that's why we follow in the footsteps of the Acharyas. We don't say, oh, the Acharyas did that, that was for their time, it's not for now. Because otherwise, then what we're doing actually by these philosophies is we're deifying Prabhupada. He's glorious, he's special, but he's not in touch with what's happening now. We have to do this. And if you check very carefully, the founders of America were deists. Hamilton, I think he was the guy who did the bank, right? He was the economy. He thought of he was a deist, very clear deist. So that's the whole thing, is that God's made the place, but it's up to us to do something with it. So it's not up to God anymore, it's up to us. So Prabhupada gave us, but it's up to us to do. That's deifying. So the point is no, the Acharyas give that which works. Right? You know, it's like Gopal Bhatta Goswami gave a system of deity worship and stuff that he wrote. Sanatan Goswami. You can use those today. They work. Rupa Goswami's given they work today. So this whole point, they're eternal. They function in the eternal realm. Krishna's eternal. His rules are eternal. They'll apply here eternal. Because it's Durga's kingdom, not ours. And she's eternal. Every creation is exactly the same as the last. That's what Narad Muni was telling. That he was there in the previous creation as the son of the maidservant. Right? Then it was the end of the universe. Then he took birth again as Brahma's son, as Narad Muni. And it's the same thing. But we're looking at, oh, it's so different than that because we've changed it. We've this, that. So this is just deists. So deists is not pure devotion. It's pretty useless, actually. And you find all those deists, they're all intellectuals, they're all educated, They're all from generally, you know, upper class kind of backgrounds. You know, who are go-getters, they're thinkers, they think that, you know, they have confidence and all that. But that's all they are. They're just deists. Nothing special. Is that word? Yeah. Yes.
With regards to his deity worship, one could conceive of like a preaching center that would just abolish the system for the sake of catering to people who are unfamiliar with it, or installing deities which are more, I guess, relatable to the new non-devotee public than other deities.
But what deity is relatable to a Malechra Yava?
Not a Krishna, because they're people like us. As opposed to, say, like Lord Jagannath or something.
Okay. So, just to say, just for, you know, since we're devil's advocating, we'll get devil's advocate the same point. Let's say some of these, because we're worried about the smart people, the intellectual people and that, because we're not really worried about the riffraff and all that, because people who would say this have to be thoughtful and all that. So they don't. So that's, let's put on the side that put aside the point that they actually care about the general public, because they don't. They just care about the particular gunna that they're from, which has a little bit of brains and a little bit thinks. So now, if you go to these people who have gone to university, they have their BA and they have this stuff like that. Because we have to remember, Indology is a BA, mm-hmm. right? So then, if you go to people's houses from those kind of backgrounds, would they not in any way have any artifacts from anywhere else in the world? They would just have, and if they do, it's just middle class stuff, you know, or just middle America stuff. You know, they wouldn't have anything interesting maybe from India, or from Europe, or from Africa, or Egypt, or...
Mm-hmm. They would, but they're ornamental in value.
Okay, but the point is, can they relate to that people from those places have worshipped those, and that they were deities for these people?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the idea that they can't relate at all, where does that come from?
From, I guess, like Christian hang-ups about idol worship.
Right, yeah, it comes from there. And of all people who have the biggest hang-ups about that, then you're going to have the Christians. I mean, the Jews are the biggest.
Mm-hmm.
Like that, because they just don't brook anything,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, Mecca, at least you had a little bump somewhere there, you know,
yeah.
like that. And the Christians, you know, they'll have Jesus and Mother Mary and, you know, all these kind of different things. Like that, Jews, nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the Torah, that's it. The altar means the Torah.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So the strongest on that point. So then, okay, but... That means then there shouldn't be any kind of deity worship if you're catering to them, right? But the thing is it functioning in a purely a Judaic kind of background? Or is it also the Judaic background then functioning within a Protestant secular community?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So how do you actually define what it is and what they can handle and what they can't?
Mm-hmm.
And then are we saying that conditioning generates Krishna consciousness? Are we saying matter is what it produces spirit? Which is what the modern academy will tell you. Right? So is that what it is? Or is that from the platform of the soul you deal with these things? Because if someone is presented with the absolute truth, why would they have a problem? I remember it in, this was, you know, some years ago. This was in the 90s in Poland, right? 98% of the population was Catholic. 2% was something else, like that. So when he would have a program, when he'd start to think, he would say, okay, how many here believe in reincarnation? Right? Now, since when reincarnation went out in Nicaea in Christianity, otherwise up to 300 AD, there was reincarnation. Then after that, then, you know, it was thrown out.
Mm-hmm.
So here you have a country of that, and for at least 40%, if not 60% of the people in the audience would raise a hand.
Mm-hmm.
So what is this thing that we're so worried about that Westerners can't relate to? you know, only deities that can do this and that. The point is it's how much do you get for a Picasso painting? Yeah, and so then who can relate? People who are educated, people people who are more intelligent. Mm-hmm. So therefore, you could say from that plane, we're catering to the most intelligent. So if you say I can't relate to it, people that I when I joined I couldn't relate to it, then all you're saying is I'm less intelligent. I came to the temple and I had issues with this and that. You're sinful, that's all. You're more sinful than the other people. Yet they joined within a few weeks. You took longer. You're more sinful. So we're supposed to take your more sinful background as a standard? There's some people that have been 20 years and they still won't join. Then we should just take their standard. We should go to them and ask, you know, how should we run this society? How should we do everything? Mm-hmm. Like that. That's the whole point. Mm-hmm. Is that where is this idea? The point is the soul is beyond the conditioning. So if you talk on the level of Vedanta, you're talking to the soul. It's beyond these things. Now, if individuals have an inability to talk actual Vedanta and believe it, and they can only talk secondary, and that's all that matters to them, they should understand they're functioning from a lower level of God consciousness. Mm-hmm. And stop trying to present that it's advanced. Just say, I'm attached, this is how I want to do things, and I can't relate to anything other than my conditioning. Just say, I'm a xenophobic, self-centered person, and I just don't like anything else other than what I know. No clothes, no food, no dealings, nothing that I hadn't grown up with. Just say that. Get out of flight, and you can go on that. You know, xenophobe pride, you know? Get out there, get your flag out there, you know? You know, and stop trying to say it's spiritual. Really annoying, really disturbing. Because otherwise, you can get into that, or you can get into what's being discussed here. You know, that we're going beyond. And then you engage. The whole point is the reason people don't relate to it is because they don't know what culture is. Because if you replace one cultural aspect with another cultural aspect, you don't mind. But if you have no culture and you get no culture, then you'll go back to anything semblance that what you know.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
That's the whole point. People joined Krishna consciousness because of the food when Prabhupada was here. Because there was such a focus. Prabhupada said we're a kitchen religion. Mm-hmm. Who today says that? Mm-hmm. How many leaders in the movement focus on prasad? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They're all on special diets. They can't eat anything anyway. So they never even think about what the devotees eat. You know what I'm saying? So Prabhupada would worry about these things.
Mm-hmm.
People would just eat the prasad and join Krishna consciousness. Mm-hmm. And so if you have stuff that's not edible, then why would people think this is better? You know what I'm saying? So I just feel sad that they haven't tasted anything decent. You know what I'm saying? Sad. Yeah. Such are the most amazing glories of contact with a great saint. By that contact, this Brahmana suddenly achieved perfection, realizing his eternal identity. Sanatana Goswami's commentary on this verse of Brihad Bhagavatamrita is abnormally lengthy. Better just to say it's long. Prabhupada does. Sravana Kirtana Smarana Bandhana, I think it's a 10-page purport. So it's like... It seeks to answer the query of how this Brahman could have achieved prema so quickly. Usually only the Lord's most qualified devotees attain pure love of God after long endeavor for the Lord's special mercy. The secret of the Brahmin success was coming into contact with a powerful saint, a topic to which Sanatana Goswami dedicates a great deal of attention. We learn that the Brahmana's lone efforts would have been of no avail. His success was possible by unique glories of sadhu sangha, incomprehensible to material minds. So that's the whole point, is that if you associate with saintly persons who are convinced about the process, that's what will make you advance.
Yes. Yes.
Does that make sense? That's the whole, because I think that, isn't that this whole chapter is on that?
Yeah,
sadhu sangha.
Yeah.
So he's just bringing out how important sadhu sangha is.
Just this section. Yeah,
this section. It's on sadhu sangha. So, therefore, to bring out that point, because here you might wonder about that, he's bringing out the glories of sadhu sangha, right? By showing how, by that association, Prabhupada even mentions that. You're associating with the spiritual master, you're advancing, you don't even know why.
Yes.
Just you happen to be in contact and you're advancing.
Yes.
Like that. So that's the whole point, is because Krishna's pleased, we advance. You associate with the devotees, Krishna's pleased.
Yes.
So we make that special, we advance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the real dynamic thing. But if we use the Protestant concept, means they don't accept saintly people.
Mm-hmm.
Protestants don't accept saints.
Mm-hmm.
Protestants don't accept culture.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You go to a Protestant church, it's blank, sterile, on purpose. Because Catholicism, you see so much nice things, and Oriental, they all have big, fancy, fancy stuff. Protestants, on purpose, make it sterile. So that means no culture, no saints, and you don't need authority.
Yes.
You just, it's you and God. Yes.
Protestants are known for their work ethic.
Huh?
The Protestant work
yeah,
ethic.
Yeah, the Protestant work ethic. It means they work very hard. The modern economy is there because of the Protestant nature.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, it would be slightly different, the economy. It would work in a different way. But it just means I work hard, I get the results. So this all comes from this. Right? So we can't say that is a good basis. Right?
Mm.
We can't say that's a good basis. Right, we're trying to say something's wrong, and then we're trying to, you know, do all kinds of discussion of how that's great,
mm-hmm.
right? Like that. If by the mode of ignorance we become conditioned to think something's bad is good, now we're going to try to say now everybody should deal like that, and that's the only way you can deal. But the point is that the modes of nature change. So whatever you say is good now, after some time it won't be good.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no use dealing with the temporary like that. You apply the temporary, but you don't have faith in it. You don't think it will generate Krishna consciousness. It can't, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sometimes we see Maharaj in association with the saintly person. Some people just reflect their qualities.
Yes.
They don't have their own.
Yes.
And some people, they develop their own qualities.
Right.
So, is there any difference? The process appears to be exactly the same.
Yes.
But obviously,
just more development, that's all. But the point is that one reflects, that just shows the power, is that in that association, you're behaving and acting like that saintly person.
Right. But then when the person is gone, it's like, I'm the same again.
Yes. But the point is that then you reflect on those reflections, you know, and it'll help. But that one also thinks like that. That means that something's developed, because otherwise, probably before they came, you thought you were doing great, and now that they've gone, you realize the position I'm in isn't as great as I thought it was. So that means some gain was there, some advancement was there, some knowledge and detachment came. Maybe not as much as one was manifested at the time. But something is there. Otherwise, you would just think, okay, now back to normal. But you think that it's not as normal. Is that... Yes.
Can we say that... the right attitude is also complementary to sadhu sangha.
Yes, yes. Well, that's what you're saying before, that satisfaction, that being fixed, that confidence. These are all, so that's why all these different qualities are given, because they're favorable to Krishna consciousness.
Yes.
Right? So you have activities that generate qualities, and those qualities are useful in Krishna's service. But it's actually the service that's important.
Yes, yes.
Right?
So the Brahmana, in that case, he has developed the right attitude.
Yes. But it appears that he was must have been some kind of a good practicing devotee.
Yes.
But he hadn't come across the absolute truth. So
yes.
He only was applying his qualities and endeavor on worshipping Durga.
Yes.
But now that he's come in contact with the absolute truth, now we see there's adjustment. Now he's interested in worshipping, in the original form.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Does that sound sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Would that be an example of someone who's brought up in the far west, as opposed to here, that he's pious, but he's not applying it properly?
They're following the proper forms, but using them purely materially.
Okay, so this is different. That Brahmana, he's different.
Means he's following the forms, but he's applying them materially. He's worshipping Durga.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it would be like that.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that make sense?
Sure.
They have the focus. So they see, is that when you just go a little bit, farther west, they follow the same forms, but then the ego comes up. It's so different, so rough.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And then because of that ego, then the tendency is you don't follow things right, because that gives them that, then that ends up with what you call the Midwestern
mm-hmm.
mentality. But then if you go to the far west, then you end up in where you get that they see that following those things actually gives the best material result.
Mm.
So then there's a commitment to them again.
Mm.
But now it's changed from a commitment to elevating yourself to a commitment to, being here now.
Sure.
Yeah. Is that
yeah.
Yeah. Yes.
As he was pointing out, the relationship between attitude and sadhusanga, couldn't you also state that it's a cause and effect relationship, that the more one takes association, the more one attitude improves?
Yes, you could say that.
All the way up to the good process.
Yes. Because, see, the thing is it means when we say the devotees are on the platform of prema, then technically that platform is called rag atmika. Means because the rag, or that attraction or attachment to Krishna, is their life and soul. Right? So that's rag atmika bhakti. We follow in their footsteps, we practice what's rag anuga. We follow in the footsteps, the anuga of those with rag.
Yes.
So in other words, those on the rag atmika platform, we follow in their footsteps, that's rag anuga.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that platform is there. So within the two, as a major category, you'll say there's that difference. But technically, we'll always be following in the footsteps of those with rag that are above us.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're all raganuga when it comes to following, Radharani and her immediate associates, who they are the ones that are rag atmika.
Mm-hmm.
So even on the platform of prema, we'll still be raganuga. But it's within there, because we define it so carefully within sadhana and all that, that sometimes if we use it there, it won't be appreciated.
Mm-hmm.
But factually, we're still following. We'll always be.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we follow now. We'll be doing that eternally. Because Radharani is already doing what she does, and she'll do that eternally. And so we're following the footsteps of those who are following her footsteps. And we'll do that eternally.
Well, then, couldn't you extend that definition to say that following anybody with more taste for service to Krishna than us is technically raganuga? Or are we taking a narrow?
Yes, you could. You could.
Yeah.
No, you can. That's the thing, is that, but then you have to be able to understand the principle.
Mm-hmm.
right? Like Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, they explain that in Bhav Sadhana, the first three stages, right, then those extend all the way down to Shraddha. Right? Mm-hmm. They only become fully manifest when you get to Bhava. Mm-hmm. But they're the potency that's making the others work.
Right.
Right? You're hearing, I'm servant of Krishna, Shravana Dasa. I'm adjusting with being a servant of Krishna and applying myself in my specific services that I'm given, like that, as Varana Dasa and Smarana Dasa. I'm trying to remember as for Krishna and doing everything for Krishna. So when it comes to the point of Nishta, then that becomes stable. Right, but then when it goes further, you get a taste, you get attachment. Then it has its full form.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So some may appreciate that or not, mm-hmm. but these are our acharyas, and so we will support those who appreciate it,
mm-hmm.
and those who oppose that. Then whatever their reasons for that, that's another thing. We just don't deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like that. If they're in other groups, we just ignore them. If they're within our own group, then there might be getting out the hobnail boots. Yes.
Sometimes there's also a confusion about what is our main practice in terms of Raghunuga Sadhana or Vaidhi Sadhana. Because it is Raghunuga Sadhana, but through Vaidhi. But then sometimes it appears that the whole thing is reversed, and many people think that the Vaidhi is the main thing.
Yes, because this is what actual preaching is for, is to define what's the difference. Right? Just like it says, you know, I think it's the first verse of Bhagavatam. You know, it's about defining the difference between matter and spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's real knowledge, that's real intelligence. Right? So that's what devotees should be doing. You know, otherwise, why did Prabhupada make the statement, you understand the six systems of philosophy, then you're qualified to sit on the Vyasasana. Right? I mean, we're sitting anyway, because someone's got to sit. Right? You know, but the point is in the future, it should be the ones giving the lectures and the classes, yes. These formal ones, are the ones that know the six systems.
Yes.
Not how old you are, or what gender you are, or any, you know, what, you know, all this kind of jazz. This is just a waste of time. The point is we should be qualifying ourselves in that way. And why to qualify? Just the notes is we're not into scholarship and all that. It's because then we can tell the difference what's pure bhakti and what's not. And so following Vaidhi, where you focus too much on the externals, that is what Rupa Goswami says is Niyamaga. Or following sadhana bhakti but not caring about the rules, that's also Niyamaga. So to be able to define that so you know exactly what's useful and what's not, it takes training. You know, it's just like, let's say, peeling potatoes. Okay? So, you hand a potato and a knife to someone who's new at it. What are some of the mistakes they make?
They cut themselves. They do too much.
Yeah, they cut off way too much. You know, there's peel and a lot of potato. You know? Or they'll be cutting and they'll leave bits and pieces here if they're like that. They just don't. You understand? So, you have to, there's training is required. So that's the whole thing, is that when one practices the sadhana, one has to know what is pure devotion and what's not. That's the real leadership. All these other things are secondary aspects. They're necessary. You have to have them. You have to have organization. Otherwise, how do you define pure devotion on a, you know, at such a large international scale unless there's organization? But if one thinks the organization is what makes the movement work, we've missed the point. So the institution is a tool to use to carry on the mission. The mission is to give pure devotional service to everybody on the planet.
Yes.
And the institution is a very excellent tool to do that. Otherwise, why would Bhaktivinoda Thakur organize, how do you say, the Namhata, which is how to organize, you know, basically all the people. And then with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Prabhupada, how to organize a structure, you know, that can accommodate that. So they're the ones that gave all these things. So they're important because they make things work nicely. But to just focus only on that is a distraction. Or to say, oh, we just care about pure devotion, so we don't care about the institution. That's also, one misses the point. Because then one doesn't understand the importance of the secondary. It's either too much secondary or not enough secondary. So both are niyamagraha.
In the context that Prabhu was mentioning, it's interesting just historically what happened with Prabhupada when he just came to the West. Then he gave the top sadhana. He gave 64 rounds and he was reading Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's amazing.
The hour and a half classes.
Yeah. And then slowly he realized these people, they can relate to him. So he...
Yeah. Yeah, and then it came down to 20-minute classes, and just every class, you're not your body.
Yeah, and in the 70s, that the whole, you know, program was established.
Yeah.
But before it was full, you know,
So that's the whole idea, is that that's what you want to give, but you start with where people are at. So you want to try to get to that platform. So the point is you deal according to how people can absorb. So, you know, what Prabhu was talking about before is that how we opened this was that, you know, therefore you're just the temples of this and that. But the point is, okay, they have just the deity. What's the deity worship? You know what I'm saying? What's the standard of deity worship? Okay, they have Radha and Krishna. What's the standard of deity worship? Home, but what's home? You know what I'm saying? So the persons who are saying that, they themselves probably don't know the difference between one end of a spoon and the other of an Akshman cup. I'm not joking. Right. It's funny, but I'm not joking. So the point is who can make a comment on deity worship? Someone who knows deity worship. Who can comment on the cooking? People who know cooking. Who can comment on management? People who know management. So people who don't know culture, don't know the Vedic culture, don't know the Pancharatra, shouldn't comment on it. That simple. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole idea, is that the point is if you did deity worship like it's supposed to be, it's attractive. With all the flowers and this and that, but that's expensive. People would rather be spending money for something else, like getting dental or something, you know. Like that. So that's the thing. So instead of looking at what's actually going to do, when people come to the temple, is there someone there to take them around? Is there prasad? Is there a nice place to sit? Is there someone going to deal nicely? That's the things that make people. But there's a good chance most of our temples you could walk through the whole place and walk out and no one would have noticed that you came. Okay. You know? So and then we're gonna fight over what deity we have? You know, so that's the thing, is that if we followed our culture. But then to follow our culture means you actually have to know what culture is. Because someone who doesn't know what culture is can't identify it. Therefore, they don't know the use of it. That's the problem. So you can't have people who lack cultural background making comments on culture.
But then wouldn't that validate their argument that we have to open up the preaching to reach out to, you know, the most fallen rungs of society, and therefore we have to make adjustments for them? That's real compassion.
Real compassion is giving Krishna consciousness. Not real compassion is focusing on the form. Because the most fallen are the Naradamas, right? Well, not the Mudas, the Naradamas. So the Naradamas are the sophisticated ones. They're the ones that would actually pick up on all the little sophisticated stuff that we do. They would appreciate the really, really high class Indian cooking, dinner, the whole experience and all that. In fact, they pay money to go to restaurants to get that, to go get a, you know, Japanese or get a this or to get a that. Or they go and they pay money for that. Mm-hmm. Those are the, when you say the most fallen, mm-hmm. like that. And also it must be understood is that we make it sound that this small group of so-called intellectuals who are, you know, xenophobic, they're not a very major amount of people on the planet like that. They're very small. Of all the demographics, they're probably one of the smallest.
Mm-hmm. Just the loudest.
Yeah, they're just the loudest. Because, in other words, they've learned enough that they can present themselves, but not enough to know what to say. You know, it's like when the kid first learns to talk, he just talks everything about it, and just like, oh, you know, like that. They don't know what to say, when, where. Then you have to train them that, so... Mm-hmm. But this whole point is that this small group is considering that they are the world. That's a real illusion. Real illusion. And like I said, if they have issues, right, then that's not good, especially when they attack the Vedic culture, because then within the context, like I said, the Naradamas, the most fallen, they fall within the Asura Bhava. The Asuras, they're intelligent, but they attack the Vedic culture. Because we have to remember, Vedic culture is how Krishna does things. So if we're giving Krishna consciousness, why shouldn't we present this as the culture? Because they're making it sound like people are interested in just doing their own culture. No, people are looking for an alternative. Otherwise, if we follow what they were saying, then yoga would never be part of the modern culture. There would be no Taco Bell, right? There would not be the Pancake House, because most of the pancakes they serve are not from America.
Pizza is Italian.
Sorry.
Cotton is Indian. Pepper too.
Jeans are Indian. Jean material?
Denim.
It's the stuff that they use in South India. They use for the boat sails. Like that. The color, the texture, and everything, is it Lee?
Levi Strauss?
Yeah, Lee. He just stuck some rivets in them. And the Haribol. Right? You know, if he had used some other cloth and put rivets in them, then they would have bought it. They were attracted by the rivets. You know.
So he made them for the gold rushers.
Yeah, gold rushers, the cowboys. You know, so the lowest class of people. So, yes. So then, yes, then call it, you know, if you want to get the lowest class of people, just stick to Southern California and leave the rest of the world alone, because they follow a different culture. You know, so it's not fair that they try to say that that's real. Compassion is giving Krishna consciousness. They say, oh, people are blocked by that, they can't see it. That's because you don't know how to preach. You don't know how to cut through and get work on the platform of the soul. You only know the externals, even though you say, well, they're not important. But you only know that. You're only confident in that. Therefore, you can't function other than in that. And the point is how many karmis join their movement? Most of them are devotees. Someone else already made them. You know, so that's just the same as Gaudiya Math. Gaudiya Math goes around, makes all ISKCON devotees into over their thing, and think, well, we were doing such serious preaching. What's the point? What's the big deal? Go pick them off out of the street. Go into the gutter. Get them out of the gutter. That's what Prabhupada got them. Like that. Because that's the fun part. You see someone from the Gaudiya Math that was the Westerner who was actually made by Gaudiya Math people, not by ISKCON people that went to the Gaudiya Math. They like ISKCON.
Yes.
They think it's, you know, it's dynamic, it's happening. They like to come and take part in our program. But the ones that were ISKCON and then go over to the South, they're the ones, oh, this, that, all that. So, you know, hey, we've had enough of this. Do we need more? We need another one? You know? Like that. We're surrounded by him here, so, you know, throw in another one. You know? Just one more to, you know, harass. Yes.
Why sometimes the devotees preach very hard and then it's in the other thing very soft, very flexible?
Sorry, I didn't quite catch it.
Sometimes devotees, okay. In the past they was preaching very hard.
Hard, yes.
And then after, very soft, like completely other thing.
Because they're only seeing, the problem is both the hard and soft, they're only seeing secondary. So what we're discussing here is a response to that particular phenomenon. So all it is Niyamagraha. So when devotees get too distracted by the secondary, then you have all these personal issues and stuff like that come up. If you're dealing in the primary, where's the issue? It's on the platform of the soul. So unless the soul is like a committed atheist, then there's nothing to get distracted by. You understand? Hard means it's not according to the nature of the audience. Right? So that's the thing. Hard's not by what words you're using, how strongly you're presenting it. Hard is by, does it match the audience you're talking to? Like I didn't know the difference between a straight edge and an emo. Right? And there's quite a bit of difference. They look pretty much the same. I mean, I should have gotten some hint on the tattoo had color in it or it didn't have color in it. Right? You know. So, well, yeah. So, the thing is I was just asking his authority on the issue. Like that. So, I go to this thing, I go to these programs, and they're all straight edge. The heavier you say it, the stronger you say it, the happier they are, the more inspired they are. You know, because otherwise, let's start off one level and say something strong, and then you see they respond nicely, and then you just go, like this. Then I went to a program where I thought the same people were there, but they were all emos. The host had to spend 5 to 6 hours after the program trying to straighten their heads up. Not that what I said was wrong, it was how I said it, you know. You understand? So that's the whole point is this thing about hard preaching, soft preaching. It's also looked at as the external. Oh, you're using strong, so that's hard, that's bad. No. Hard means it's using language and force in that the person doesn't appreciate. Soft means using nothing that there's nothing to appreciate. You understand? So that's what you say. Preaching means you say what is to be said to the individual according to what they understand. You use their examples and this and that. But you're talking the absolute truth. Understand? That's the balance that we're talking here. So what Prabhu is mentioning, what we're mentioning here, then that's the difficulty, is where is the focus? Because basically speaking, these two seeming different philosophies are saying exactly the same thing, using the same words, same techniques, same examples, same everything. But the difference is where the focus is. One's on pure devotional service, one's on their attachment. But otherwise, if you look at it externally, you can get easily confused because they'll both look exactly the same. Yes?
So what you're saying is that on the pretext of de-emphasizing form, they're actually laying more stress.
They are laying more stress. Otherwise, why say that dhotis look like diapers? Mm-hmm. And we shouldn't do that. Because, you know, all they have to do is say, I have no idea, I am uncultured, I don't know how to dress, I couldn't put on a dhoti if my life depended upon me. properly so it looked nice. And so therefore, because I'm the best and I'm fabulous and I'm fantastic, therefore no one else should do that. Even though there's people that put on dhotis that look fantastic. They know how to dress. They know it's culture. So that kind of xenophobia should not be allowed to be presented as, one, a philosophy, and two, let alone that it's advanced. It's just downright gross, grungy, uncultured. You don't say those kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. You just don't say those kind of things. Because
mm-hmm.
the point is if you oppose the Vedic culture, Krishna says in the 11th canto, even if you're a devotee, you're actually attacking him. So, one should think about these things very carefully. That's why I said, if the individual who says that, they came to the movement and were put off by these things, that's because their heart was dirty. That temple that they visited was full of devotees who were not put off and who joined anyway. And there, one or two, you know, who are dissatisfied with that, and now we're going to make that for everybody? We can't. We can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
What it is that devotees being immature, that they're doing it, they accept it, and then they speak like that to the other person and don't catch the sensitivity that they're not responding, so they're not adjusting. Then you can say, that's hard preaching.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is you have to say, is yes, the preacher should have been more sensitive, but you also have to recognize that who they're talking to is less qualified.
Mm-hmm.
So you also have to consider that. You can't take someone who can't tolerate other cultures other than what they grew up in and take that as a standard of you know, the middle class, you know, democratic society. It's not representative at all.
Mm-hmm.
Most people of the world, especially now, are more inquisitive about these cultures of the world than they were in the 60s. The hippies, yeah, they just did anything.
Mm-hmm.
But the hippies generally were from backgrounds that were from upper class. They had had experience of this. So then they would pick up some things, some more, some less. But because they're from the East Coast, they have a drive that was very strong. And so the West Coast can't handle the drive of the East Coast. No one can handle New Yorkers. You know? Especially from Jersey. Right?
Mm-hmm.
The attitude of someone from Jersey is whatever they think, if you're not thinking that, there's something wrong with you. You know, it's just really, just I'm impressed. I thought it was just certain people like that. I met someone else from Jersey, they were exactly the same. Like, okay, cool. You know, you know, just you know, what to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, just people can't handle the intensity. And so therefore then, you know, there's a problem. So therefore, learn to be sensitive. Don't get rid of the intensity. Learn to direct it and make it, you know, more palatable. But this whole idea is, no, throw it all out. This is nonsense. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur calls the useless.
Mm-hmm.
You don't start over. You start from where you are and bring that into line.
Mm-hmm.
You don't throw it out and then. So that's the things we can't throw these things out. You have to learn what it is. You can say, oh, the cooking's not good. So learn. It was good. Why isn't it good now? And the people who are complaining are the very leaders that never supported it. And so if it's like this, they're also at fault. They can't blame the Indian culture. Indians cook great. The guy on the side of the road cooks fabulous. You know what I'm saying? Like that. He may only cook one preparation, but he cooks it as good as a 3-star chef. Easily. But he only knows one prep, so he's not going to get generally much of a star for that. Though I have heard that they gave a Michelin star to some street food vendor in Hong Kong. Yeah, it was just the quality of it was so good. But these guys don't go around much because they only go by recommendation. So, you know, they're not checking out all the little, you know, roadside places. You know, so... That's the thing, is that they know how to cook, they know how to dress, they know how to do everything. Everything that the West has tried to do that we would consider came from India. Perfumes are from India. Silks and fine clothes are from India. All these things are from India. Then someone smart takes them. The French take them, do nice things with them. Italians do nice things with them. Different people do nice things with them. But they came from India. Yes.
When you say nice things, does that mean they're just directed towards sense gratification?
No, I'm just saying these refined things. Okay. Yeah, they of course, they directed it. But I'm saying before it was, I mean, sense, they came from India. They picked them up there. And then, you know, and then they took it and developed it and made it into a whole science. But the point is the concept of putting on perfume, which was the standard thing that everybody did in India. The
concept of bathing.
The concept of bathing, yeah. Taking a bath, taking a shower, you know. Like that. I mean, there was a thing in the West. If you took a bath more than once a week, you'd get sick. You know, so in this, you know, it's like you know, it's like that.
It's coming back now. This idea.
Sorry.
Take bath more than once a month, you become sick.
It's really? It's becoming popular. Oh, okay. Yeah. I mean, dogs never take baths. Right? No, but they don't take a bath. They just go and sit in it, so only half is in the sewage water. That's only because it's so deep. But it's not that they're taking a bath. Not like birds who specifically go and take a bath. Like the dogs, it's cool, so then they go. Birds take a bath because it's, you know, bath time. Dogs, they're just... It's cool, so they sit in it. Yeah, that's all. Elephants, now they like baths. They can sit in there, you have to be scrubbed. Cows have to be bathed. Like that. Horses like to be brushed. You know, there's a few animals that, you know, really insist on it. But, you know, the others, dogs don't. They're cool. You know, have you... They're saying, wow, that smells like a wet elephant. You know, no, it's a wet dog, right? Because you make a dog wet, they smell bad.
They smell bad when they're not.
Yeah, but when they get wet, they're worse. Right? So the whole thing is that one has to know exactly what is the middle, right? That one's intelligent to understand that the middle is the place to be, but you have to know what is the middle. Otherwise, one will get off and one will miss the whole point. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So we have to be very, very careful with that.
You can't know the middle if you don't know each end.
Yeah, you don't. You have to know. Yeah, because if you don't know what, yeah, very good. If you know where the ends are, you don't know where the middle is. Mm-hmm. So that's the difficulty, is that these things get off. So. One thing that it is a problem, that if you're dealing with preaching and you're not sensitive to who you're preaching to, that's not good. But that doesn't mean then you replace it with something else. No, you just preach according to how the acharyas give. You know, see their example, how they do, how they deal. Mm-hmm. Right? That'll make it work. Because mm-hmm. when Rupa Goswami says niyamagraha, that means either way is wrong. You know, and since the West loves to do the pendulum swing, then swinging to the other side, the soft preaching, is how is that improved? All it is that so many people are doing soft preaching. Some are making devotees, most aren't. Right? The some that are, what it is that they are talking to the people who, using words and terminologies and examples they can relate to. Mm-hmm. That's why they're successful. So they're preaching. They may be doing it in a pleasant way, so it's categorized as soft preaching, but it's not actually soft preaching. They're preaching. As people who do soft preaching, generally there's no results. Very minimal results.
They make friends.
Yeah, they make friends and, you know, like that. Yeah. But if you preach, they become devotees. They become dynamic. They become, you know, committed. Mm-hmm. Like that. You know, that's the point, is you have to know what is preaching, and so therefore you know what's hard and what's soft. So preaching is correct. Hard is wrong, soft is wrong. You know, because if hard's wrong, soft has to be wrong. Because mm-hmm. right? They're opposites. Right? So that means preaching is correct. Mm-hmm. Is that... So one has to be able to identify what is actually spiritual and what's not, because you can't say, "Oh, it's not about the secondary," and make it all about the secondary. Right? It means, in other words, if it's not about the secondary, and it's the Western is fine to use, then that means if it's not about the secondary, the Vedic's fine to use. So if people like the Veda, use that. If they like the Western, use that. Use what? But no, this is that we don't use the Vedic, we only use the Western. So that's not, we don't care about the secondary. That is, we totally can care about the secondary. In fact, we care about the secondary so much we don't care about the primary. So that's where we have to be very, very careful. Otherwise, it sounds good. See, in other words, selling glass is easy. This whole thing, we want to make it popular. But you just have to sell glass to be popular. You sell diamonds, it's going to be the rare person. So the glory is figuring out how to sell diamonds to a lot of people. Right? You know what I'm saying? Like De Beers. Now that's some glory. Right? But then saying, oh no, but we sell, glass artificial stuff, and we sell to more people than De Beers do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but what are you selling? Mm-hmm. Yes. So that's the whole thing, is that you can't lose the quality for quantity. Mm-hmm. Like that. So you want both. You want quality in quantity. Yes. Not quantity in quantity. Mm-hmm. So that's a unique thing Prabhupada is doing. So we have to be careful about that. Otherwise, in the name of focusing on the primary, one actually misses the whole. One actually misses the primary. Mm-hmm. Now what do we do? Just keep going?
Yes.
Why not?
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. At least that topic gets me through the day. Okay. We learned that the Brahmana's lone efforts would have been of no avail. His success was possible by the unique glories of Sadhu Sangha. Incomprehensible to material minds, because it's the association of the Vaishnavas. Otherwise, one can't understand why that would be there. Mm-hmm. Right? One thinks, no, I do my work, that's what's getting the results.
Yes.
No, but I do the work, and in the association of devotees, that's what gets the results. So it's actually the association of devotees. Then we can say, oh, well, they just hang out with devotees, but you have to do something in that association. So it's a combination of effort in this improper association. Yes. That's what's working. So there's the devotional system, and that has to be practiced in association with devotees.
See.
So you have to get both. You can't get just one and without the other. In Srimad Bhagavatam 3:23:55, Sri Devahuti remarks, "Association to gratify the senses is certainly the path of bondage, but the same type of association performed with a saintly person leads to the path of liberation, even if performed without knowledge." So, if you're following the same activity, but doing it in connection to Krishna in the association of saintly persons, that will lead you to liberation. Right? It'll take you out of the material world. But the point is that we're not interested in liberation. Right? We're interested in bhakti. So, here, the association with the saintly persons is because the saintly persons are devotees.
Yes.
Not just that they're a higher class of, follower of the Vedic culture and all that. It's because they're devotees.
Yes.
So because of that devotion, that gives you the highest liberation, right? So it's the path of liberation, but we keep going. Once we get to liberation, we keep going to bhakti. Footnote 3. Srila Prabhupada comments. Association with a great saintly person who also results in liberation. Just as whether one goes forward towards fire knowingly or unknowingly, the fire will make one warm. Devahuti expressed a gratefulness, for although she wanted to associate with Kardama Muni only for sense gratification, because he was spiritually great, she was sure to be liberated by his benediction. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:23-55 purport. So it automatically comes. You associate with saintly persons, you automatically advance. Right? Now you take that seriously, apply it into your life, you advance better, quicker. Right? When an ignorant person mixes with other degraded persons, the result is entanglement in material existence. In the enjoyment of food, drink, sex, and so on. Footnote 4. The following verse is quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 22:91. It is better to accept the miseries of being encaged within bars and surrounded by burning flames than to associate with those bereft of Krishna consciousness. Such association is a very great hardship. Katyayana Sabhita. Right? Because it will seem to be more pleasant and seem to be more nice, but it will bind you up in the material world. So the effect is you'll be caged in the material existence, the forest fire of material existence. So that's what you'll end up with anyway. Right? You just don't know it. So the one, you knowingly accept that to avoid it, and the others, you think I'm avoiding it, and you end up actually... Right?
That's irony right there.
Yeah, that's irony. Yeah. But the company of pure souls, even if entered into with the same ignorance, enables one to become nisanga, free in two ways, detached from matter and uplifted to pure love of God. Right. So when they say the detachment from matter, the liberation, that's just coming on the side because we think it's a very great thing. So we're just showing just by associating with that, that just comes on the side. It's not a big thing. So the big thing that one gains in the association of devotees is attraction for Krishna, love for Krishna. Right? The other just comes automatically. Right? But you'll be able to appreciate the one first before the other. Right? Because we start becoming detached from the material energy before we see that, you know, significantly we develop love for Krishna. Because the material world's insignificant anyway, so becoming detached from it is not that big of a deal. You know, we may make a big deal out of it, but it's not actually that much of a big deal. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Okay. Prema is a form of detachment because it shuns all pursuits other than the attempt to please the personality of Godhead. Right? So that's the most advanced stage of detachment, that you detach from anything that's not connected to Krishna. Mm-hmm. Therefore, it is stated in the Yoga Vashishta Ramayana. In all circumstances, one should approach saintly persons, even if one receives no teachings. Spontaneous dialogue with them imparts valuable lessons. When one approaches persons who have real knowledge, emptiness overflows with fullness, death becomes immortal nectar, and disasters can seem like good fortune. Yes. Right? So whatever we think is that it's the end of the world, that's what we, no, it's... beginning of, right? I said, when the world hands you lemons, become Krishna conscious. Right? In Srimad Bhagavatam, we're here, you know, associate with pure devotees. Right? In the Srimad Bhagavatam 3:7:19, Sri Vidura says, by serving the feet of the spiritual master, one develops transcendental ecstasy in the service of the personality of Godhead, who is the unchangeable enemy of the Madhu demon, and whose service vanquishes one's material distresses. Right. So he's pointing out you get both. You get the developed transcendental ecstasy in association with Krishna, and you vanquishes one's material distresses. Mm-hmm. Right, because that's material existence, is the distress that comes from it.
Yes.
Right? You can say, oh, if we're just happy, then where is it material? But the point is, the distress comes with the happiness. They go together. Mm-hmm. Right? When you get one, you get the other with it. You know, so when you go to buy, I'll take a half a kilo of material happiness, you know, like that. And then they first bring out this monster box and put it on the table. He says, what's that? Says that? It's so light. It's so, no, that's the distress that comes along with this. I once calculated, I think it's about 2,000 to 1, but we don't propagate that
Which
much.
Units?
I'm just saying, whatever you get in the happiness is about 2,000 of that of not so happy. You know, but we don't emphasize that because we don't want anyone to get the sugar.
But didn't we once said that, it's even more goes this way, the more goes
yes,
that
yes,
way.
Of course. No, but that's just the movement of the energy. But how we perceive it, that's another thing.
Oh, she also makes us perceive it so bad? Or we make it ourselves?
We make it ourselves. Mm-hmm. It's just like this. Just for example, let's say you're talking with some lady and she's having a bad time. Right? It's the end of the world, it can't be fixed, there's nothing else can be done, and this and that. And you see very clearly, no, you just have to do this and do that and all that, no? What if that same situation is happening to you? Then it's like what she's saying, it's the end of the world. So in other words, the oscillation is just like what we were saying, but our perception of it is, that's why it says don't become elated in happiness. Or what's the other? In distress? Forget what it was. In other words, you become very disturbed in distress. Because even though it just goes down this much, we take it much farther, and it goes up this much, we take it much farther. So then you could say, yes, on that is how much we perceive happiness is how much we'll perceive distress.
And the perception.
So like that. But what I'm saying is the volume, that was what I was talking about. The degree, that will be as we said, it'll be balanced. So how happy you become, that's how distressed you become. But the volume, how often you're happy and how often you're distressed, now that doesn't seem to necessarily balance out. So. Does that make sense?
Not enough.
Yeah, we're not saying that one unit up and 2,000 down isn't the thing. No, we're just saying is that it'll be one up, one down. But it just, there may be, you know, there may be a bit more of the one and a blip of happiness and then more of the...
There's only one way for your body to be healthy, but unlimited ways for it to be sick.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Okay. Vidura here speaks to his Siksha Guru, Maitreya Muni. By serving Maitreya, Vidura expects to obtain the service of the Supreme Lord, who is difficult to understand, but whom one can approach by serving his pure devotees. Right, so that's what he expects. He expects by serving, approaching the saintly person, he will be able to understand, you know, or develop that love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right, so he expects to obtain the service of the Supreme Lord. Right, so that's what one's expecting to get. The Supreme Person is Kuta Sta, which means both unchanging and inconceivable. As Sri Kapiladev tells his mother, Satam Prasangan Mama Virya Samvido Bhavanti Hrit Karna Rasayana Kata Tadjoshanad Ashvapavarga Vartmani Shadha Ratir Bhaktir Anu Kramish Yati. In the association of pure devotees, discussion of the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is very pleasing and satisfying to the ear and the heart. By cultivating knowledge of the Lord's activities, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation. And therefore, one is freed and one's attraction becomes fixed. Then real devotion and devotional service begin. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:25-25. So we're performing devotional service, but then when one becomes fixed in devotional service, then that's then you know, then how you say what was the reading? Then real devotion and devotional service begin. Right? Then when you come to the planet of Bhava, which is even more of it, then real devotion, and then when you come to Prema, now that is real. Right? So that's the whole point, is that by associating with these great personalities and hearing like that, then we become. So the more we learn about the Lord, then the more there's opportunity about the Lord, how nice that was, and then there's what goes on in the material world. Because you can start to compare them.
Yes.
Right? That's the thing about Sanatana Goswami's writing in such a way, he gives us that experience of what's going on there.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
He's not just giving facts, he's giving the experience.
Yes.
Then we can compare that experience to other experiences that we've had in the material world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to see they don't exactly match.
Yes.
Right? The devotional is so much greater. What Sanatana Goswami is so much greater.
Yes.
Then what, so that, having that faith, that's what then makes devotional service go forward so much quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we associate with these great personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's the idea. So we're associating with Prabhupada, with the Acharyas, and that by that association, then we will advance, even though we don't necessarily know it or understand.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
By comparing, you know, the Advaita with the Puranchanda story, we can also see that.
Yes. Yes. Such a difference.
It's the only way.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, Puranjana is thinking he's having a great time,
yeah.
But the level he's functioning on is not really any taste. But you see when
yes.
Kumar is there and explaining how Krishna's pastimes and
yes.
how he's taking lunch and you know all the different things that go on there, the comparison is just night and day.
Yes.
So that's when one sees that, that's when one you know starts to advance very quickly,
yes, yes, yes.
Because then, like it says here, one gradually becomes advanced on the path of liberation, because then you see like that.
Yes.
But it says by cultivating, right? So we cultivate. Yes. We do this on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm.
That's the idea. Something you do regularly, that's what has the effect. You do it and then don't. It has effect. And because things done in devotional service are never lost, that effect never goes away. But if you do the same thing on a daily basis, or nitya, that's why I said nityam bhagavata sevaya. Right? Not occasional. You know, it's daily. Right? So that by that, then one advances very quickly.
But it still takes a lot of time.
That's there. But
very quickly. Comparison to eternity?
Yes, comparison to eternity. That you just have to do, you know, okay, X amount of years, you know, that seem like forever, and then actual forever. Yeah, you know, we've been in the material world forever, literally. And this, it just feels like forever, but it's not. So, yeah, so don't worry. It all comes with time. Here, Lord Kapiladev mentions three symptoms of the gradual development of prema. Firm conviction, shraddha, love for the Lord, rati, and unswerving dedication to his service, bhakti. In the course of devotional advancement, each of these symptoms becomes manifest naturally, without separate endeavor. Lord Kapiladev does not intend to say that the sequence of development is literally shraddha, then rati, then bhakti. Rather, we should understand that first a new devotee acquires faith, shraddha, then takes up the process of bhakti by hearing, chanting, and serving, and later achieves rati. Because bhakti means both the practice of devotional service and the mature stage of spontaneous love, to say that rati, prema, is the fruit of bhakti is correct. So that's why then he puts it in that order. You have faith, so you take up bhakti, then the fruit of bhakti will be rati. With the same concept of bhakti in mind, Sri Dhruva prays to Lord Vishnu. O unlimited Lord, kindly bless me so that I may associate with great devotees who engage in your transcendental loving service constantly. As the waves of a river constantly flow, such transcendental devotees are completely situated in an uncontaminated state of life. By the process of devotional service, surely I will be able to cross the nascent ocean of material existence, which is filled with the waves of blazing, fire-like dangers. It will be very easy for me, for I am becoming mad to hear about your transcendental qualities and pastimes, which are eternally existent. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.11. So here you have someone who was very maturely motivated, right? Dhruv Maharaj is very maturely motivated, right? Means, you know, somebody wants to do something great or have something great. You know, here he wants a kingdom bigger than Brahma's, right? You know, how does that work? You know, like that, again, about the child wants the impossible. But because he turned to the Lord for it, he got the impossible. Right? So he got this, you know, spiritual planet. Like that. But his motive in the beginning was material, but because of the association of the devotee, developing that faith, following the process, then that love for Krishna developed. Right? And then he saw that these other things were like broken glass.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? So that's the thing. So actually, technically, when we're talking about it, it's diamonds are broken pieces of glass.
Yes.
You know. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. We need to be convinced about the difference.
Yes, we have to be convinced about the difference. Well, they both look shiny. And they both are clear. And like that. But one you get cut, one you don't.
Yes.
That's the problem. Because the devotees of Vishnu serve him constantly, their hearts are completely pure. And for that reason, they are exalted souls. The association of such Vaishnavas is extremely desirable. One who achieves it need not bother aspiring for the fourth goal of life, liberation. For liberation comes automatically as a byproduct of pure devotion. Dhruva anticipates that in the company of the Vaishnavas, he will drink the nectar of topics about the Supreme Lord, which will intoxicate him and empower him to cross effortlessly the dangerous ocean of samsara. Drunkards are mainly interested in the taste of the liquor, for they have only a superficial interest in the secondary effects of alcohol, such as its ability to ease the discomfort of cold weather. Like that. Yeah. In the same way, we'll just keep quiet. just thinking that. If it wasn't for that secondary effect, probably half of Russia wouldn't exist. In the same way, devotees who have a taste for drinking the nectar of Bhagavad Bhakti consider relishing that elixir forever their principal goal. They accept liberation and other secondary benefits only when such boons do not obstruct that eternal delight. Right, so that's the whole thing, is that it can't obstruct the primary aspect. Secondary can be accepted, but only in its support of the primary.
Yes.
So if in any way it gets in the way of the primary, then it's to be rejected. That's how one has to judge. Right? So that's the point. So that's why one is very careful, because the Vedic system of secondary is designed that it's naturally supportive of the primary. Though, being secondary, you can use it without.
Yes.
But it is designed to be used in connection with the primary.
Yes. Yes.
While modern, none of it's designed to be used in connection with the primary. Yes. So how do you make the connection?
Yes.
Like that. So the only way is that from the primary into the Vedic secondary, then transform that into the modern. Then you can have an idea. But otherwise, if you just have the modern and then you have the primary, you may not see how they connect.
Yes.
Because lip services won't do it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Like that.
And Maharaj, it's very important to understand clearly what is primary, what is secondary.
Yes.
And how to engage the secondary in the service of the primary.
Yeah, because it has to manifest the primary.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. That's what has to happen.
Yes.
Like that. Because that's the point of the secondary. It manifests primary.
Yes.
It's not meant for just being comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Right? This whole idea of make everybody comfortable. How do you make everybody comfortable? How does that work?
Another one.
Huh?
Another
one. Okay. Now we have the Halava Vadi here has presented that the Halava is the universal all-accommodating principle.
But
the unifying principle.
Is it vegan? Only for young people. Only for young people.
That's a matter of quantity.
Yes.
You can make adjustments.
Yeah, no, that's it. That's also a theory, is eat whatever you like, just eat less of it. So I had one godbrother. He couldn't not eat less. So he would target things that by eating a ridiculous amount, it wouldn't make him sick. Like that. Huh? Oh, he would keep changing every 2 weeks. He had a new thing. But I remember once it was mangoes. He only eat mangoes. So he'd eat 10 kilos of mangoes. You know, he wouldn't eat anything else, so that way he didn't get sick.
Yes.
But could you eat mangoes again after 10 kilos a day?
You could for 2 weeks.
Yes, it's possible.
And you say he could.
Yes.
And then after that he was on to something else, you know, like that. So he kind of adjusted. He took the opposite of what I mentioned. I was saying, eat whatever you like, just eat less. His was, eat as much as you want, just only eat less within a narrower range of what you're eating. Right? You know, so.
Sure. Over the course of a life, it balances out.
Yes, it does. Because he won't eat mangoes for another year. In Srimad Bhagavatam 4.24.57.58, Lord Shiva gives this opinion. If one, by chance, associates with a devotee, even for a fraction of a moment, one is no longer subject to attraction by the results of karma or jnana. What interest can he have in the benedictions of the demigods, who are subject to the laws of birth and death? My dear Lord, your lotus feet are the cause of all auspicious things, and the destroyer of all the contamination of sin. I therefore beg your lordship to bless me with the association of your devotees, who are completely purified by worshipping your lotus feet, and who are merciful upon the conditioned souls. I think that your real benediction will be to allow me to associate with such devotees. So we see here is Brihad Bhagavatam Rita being that, it's bringing out what is the nectar of Bhagavatam, which means the association of Vaishnavas. So we see here in all these different pastimes, the Sanatana Goswami shows that this is the key point, like all of Shiva's prayers, the song of Lord Shiva, the actual essential point is the association of devotees. Right? Because in that association, then you can actually develop love for Krishna. Right? So you want to develop love for Krishna, so you meditate upon Krishna in this way and include Krishna in your life, but the real way that that will work is in the association of devotees. Same with Guru Maharaj. Like that. So, in other words, the company of the supremeless devotees dances on the heads of all other goals of life. The lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who killed the demon named Aga, what does that mean? Remove all sins. May remove
the feet to the feet. Remove all sins.
The lotus feet who killed the remove. Okay, I get it. The lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who killed the demon named Aga, remove all sin. Okay. The Lord's... Okay. Yes. So there was... I'm not sure it wasn't also Koresh. There's a lot of pastime of Koresh with Ramanujacharya. Mm-hmm. Is that when he was taking darshan? I'm not sure if it was Rangaji or Bharat Raj, but in any case, Ramanuja is there, because you have quite a narrow doors for these South Indian temples, right? Because they're built like forts for protection. Because in those days, it had to be a fort.
Yes.
Otherwise, then people would come and make problems. So it has a narrower door, and so Ramanuja standing in front of the door, then offering prayers to the deity. Then, just next to the door, with his back, with his back to the deity, facing Ramanuja, offering prayers, was Koresh.
Yes.
And then after this, then Ramanuja says, hey, what's going on here. You're supposed to worship Krishna. He says, no, you know Krishna. Yeah. I know you. I worship you. You worship Krishna. But if I worship you, I'll get Krishna. So he was always like that, focused.
Yes.
You know, like that.
It's a real disciple.
Yes. There's a few pastimes like that. That kind of study. Yes.
Is there anywhere we can find all these pastimes of Purush?
I think they're in that. I think one devotee did a book called Life of Ramanujacharya. Okay. I think they're in there. Sorry? Maimisharanya.
Maimisharanya. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, so it's there. You know, nice, simple. Yeah. Like that.
Very good.
Yeah.
One of the core tenets of the Sri Vaishnava philosophy is Vaishnava Seva.
Vaishnava Seva, yes. Yes.
And pure devotional service.
Pure devotional service. Is that one of the ones that Chaitanya took from them?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like that. So then that's, yeah. So because they really get into Vaishnava Seva. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, why would these stories come up?
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Because they come out a lot in there. You don't see it. Other sampradayas, then there'll be different focuses, but they focus a lot on the service of the devotees. That's why Ramanuja actually then I think took sannyas, because his wife wouldn't serve the devotees. She wouldn't see other than she was a smarta, and she would only see as a smarta sees. So his guru was actually from a Brahmin family, but a lesser social status than his one. And so his wife would only see that. So she would always consider him lower. She wouldn't consider him higher and stuff like that. And, he discussed it many times, and then she just forget it. I'm not accepting this. The Lord's fame is the source of all holy tirthas, including the river Ganga, and also the river Jamuna, whose bathing ghats the gopis approach to fetch water. Yeah, just his glories are the tirtha, because the tirthas then are all about his development. You know what I mean? All about, it means one becomes purified, one becomes, blessed, because that's with the Lord's fame. Lord Shiva takes two purifying baths, one externally in the Ganga and the other internally in the Jamuna. Similarly, a bath in the Supreme Lord's fame purifies his devotees in two ways, externally by absolving them from hellish punishment, and internally by cleansing their hearts of desires for material enjoyment. So just hearing the glories of the Lord, then one gets all this benefit. Persons dedicated to the fame of the Supreme Lord and to his lotus feet are merciful to all creatures. Such devotees always live purely, devoid of lust and other contaminations of the heart. And they have simplicity in all other exemplary qualities. Lord Shiva prays that Lord Vishnu's greatest mercy on him would be simply to let him come in touch with the Supreme Lord's devotees. And so all benefit will get there. It means we're doing our sadhanas, we're doing our activities, but the real point that drives it all is the association of devotees. That's what's going to make it work the best. Raghu Gana explains to Jadabharat. How did I get Raghu Gana? What happened to the H? Okay, Rahugana. I was thinking, who's Raghu Gana? I don't remember that guy. Rahugana explains. Okay, this birth as a human being on earth is the best of all. Even birth among the demigods in the heavenly planets is not as glorious. What is the use of the exalted position of a demigod? In the heavenly planets, due to profuse material comforts, there is no possibility of associating with devotees. Right, because that's not what the mood's about. It's not about associating with devotees.
Yes.
People are in the heavenly planets because they want to enjoy the fruits of their activities. They've done the work, they want the results. Yes. So that's what the association is based on.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Like that. So then that association with devotees is rare. So for Narad Muni comes by or that, it's not very often. Mm-hmm. He's generally, hangs out with the four Kumaras, with Lord Shiva, comes down here sometimes, but in the heavenly planets you don't hear of him so much. You hear it past tense when he's traveling through space and he meets somebody and interacts, but not so much that he's, you know, there with the demigods. Yes.
Could we say that the devotees now who don't really value Sadhu Sangha or have this residual mentality from being in the heavenly planets, maybe?
Yes, and if they're not careful, that's where they can go.
Right.
Yes. Yeah, that or just, you know, how you say, commitment to sense gratification, but, you know, one is, tends to be more pious.
Uh-huh.
Like that. Because the things go, the material world is based on sense gratification, so it doesn't matter that one's pious or not. One can have that great, I say, commitment to sense gratification.
Uh-huh.
Like that. But the tendency is that having come down from there, one has that taste for sense gratification, but here you have to work for it. There it just comes. So the tendency will get into sinful activities. So if someone's pious enough, they may continue pious activities and elevate themselves again.
Mm-hmm.
But it appears that, you know, the cycle of samsara, that you're pious, you get the results, you enjoy that, then when you come back down to here, then you don't get those same results, so then you turn to sinful life, and so then that takes you down. And then when you suffer so much, then you're willing to follow the rules, so then you start up again. Right? Like that. So if there's austerity, you're going up. When the austerity stops, you're going down. Like that, basically. Human life is the most congenial situation for becoming attracted to Bhagavad Bhakti. Demigod life may be desirable to foolish people, but great saints like Jarabharat rarely even visit the heavenly planets. The demigods, being too much absorbed in sense gratification, generally do not deserve the company of such pure Vaishnavas. Rather than travel to heaven, saintly Vaishnavas who keep their hearts cleansed by contemplating the glories of Lord Hrishikesha usually prefer to wander among the holy places on earth. Because then the holy places, people generally go to the holy places because of piety or that, or the idea of the saintly people. So there's more chance that they'll hear from them there and hear about, you know, pure devotional service there than at somewhere else. Right? You know, I mean, don't get me wrong, we're not saying anything bad about Tallahassee. We're just, you know, saying that.
You know, also not seeing anything good.
Well, that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? But then the point is devotees go, and then they preach, and they open centers, so then even Tallahassee becomes a place of pilgrimage. So then by traveling to those holy places, then the living entities get benefits. So the point is they'd rather come here and go to the holy places than go to the heavenly planets, because there they're just interested in sense gratification.
Plus, the Lord performed so many pastimes here, but
yes.
Not so many.
Yeah, not so much then. I mean, there must be plenty of pastimes as the Manvantara avatara,
uh-huh.
Right? But you don't hear of them much because basically it's just to take care of Indra.
Yeah.
So those things that are special in context with devotees and stuff like that, that you generally hear about.
Mm-hmm.
Like Vamanadeva, he's the Manvantara avatar, but he's to take care of Indra's interests. But then he's dealing with Bali Maharaj, and then he becomes a great devotee.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So that's why we hear about that pastime. But other things we don't hear about much are the pastimes of the thousand-headed Vishnu, or we don't hear of much.
Mm-hmm. Like Kwama. The churning of the...
Churning, yes, yes. No, you hear something.
A few.
Yeah, a few. But even sometimes he doesn't appear for that pastime.
Oh, yeah?
Some pastimes they just churn the mountain and that's it. So this one where Kurma's there, Krishna Garba's on the top, and Krishna's there, and all that, that one's more special.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. But it's not always that he appears he's there. Or if he's there, he's not brought out as a major feature.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. In the opinion of Sri Prahlad Maharaj, unless persons very much inclined towards materialistic life smear upon their bodies the dust of the lotus feet of a Vaishnava, completely freed from material contamination, such persons cannot be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, who is glorified for his uncommon activities. Only by becoming Krishna conscious and taking shelter at the lotus feet of the Lord, in this way can one be freed from material contamination. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.5.32. In the words of King Muchakunda, when the material life of a wandering soul has come to an end, O Achyuta, you may attain the association of your devotees. And when he associates with them, there awakens within him devotion unto you. Who are the goal of devotees, unto you who are the goal of devotees and the Lord of all causes and effects. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.51.53. So when one's being in the material world is coming to an end, that's when you come to in contact with devotees. So if you come in contact with devotees and don't take advantage, means your material existence isn't coming to an end yet.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So therefore, don't make a society about that. Conditioned souls wander aimlessly in the cycle of birth and death, and only after they have become fed up with the wandering are they allowed to come in and touch with pure devotees. Then, by the company of saintly Vaishnavas, a few of those fortunate souls are not only released from the cycle of birth and death, but also giving something much more precious, pure love for the supreme controller of all causes and effects. Now, so he's the cause of all causes and effects. So therefore, whatever you're seeing, whatever is important to you, then that's the effect. What's the cause? Why do you like the effect? Because it has qualities of Krishna in it.
Yes.
Right? Because yes. The qualities of the cause are always there in the effect.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the reason we are get distracted by effects is because of the qualities of Krishna that are in them. So understanding that, then we focus on the cause of all cause, you know. You understand? And then that keeps going back till you get to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Because it may be Mahavishnu like this is the cause.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is who's the cause of the cause? That's Krishna. Yeah. And if they are not fortunate enough to achieve intimate love for the Supreme Lord, at least they learn how to reverently serve Him, the ruler of all great demigods and ordinary creatures. These opinions are confirmed by Lord Krishna Himself in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11:26-31-34. Just as cold, fear, and darkness are eradicated for one who has approached the sacrificial fire, so dullness, fear, and ignorance are destroyed for one engaged in serving the devotees of the Lord. The devotees of the Lord, peacefully fixed in absolute knowledge, are the ultimate shelter of those who are repeatedly rising and falling within the fearful ocean of material life. The devotees are just like a strong boat that comes to rescue persons at the point of drowning. Just as food is the life of all creatures, just as I am the ultimate shelter for the distressed, and just as religion is the wealth of those who are passing away from this world, my devotees are the only refuge for persons fearful of falling into a miserable condition of life. My devotees bestow divine eyes, whereas the sun allows only external sight, and that only when risen in the sky. My devotees are one's real worshipable deities and real family. They are one's own self, and ultimately they are non-different from me. So Krishna here is making the point. So we've heard from all the other acharyas, but not Krishna himself. He says, no, this is the way it is. It's all about the devotees. So, thank you.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai
Nitai Gaura.